Oh, what was really funny with the, what was the guy, Dominic? When I said that I would want to move because I'm interested in like theater and movies, he did, that's gay.
Yeah.
To which, oh man, it took everything in me not to just like lose my shit laughing.
What did you not understand about me sucking the dick?
Yeah, exactly. Wait, that's gay?
I know you guys had the conversation. You're just like, how much money? And he says how much money he would suck a dick for, and then he goes, that's fucking gay, dude. You just said you'd suck a dick for $100 million. What's up?
How do you expect a woman to suck your dick for free if you would only do it for $100 million?
Yeah.
Tell me, how does that logic work?
Well, I've always paid to get my dick sucked. So.
Yeah, there it is.
I'm a true ally.
Equal.
Fucking
talking about my third
feminazi
eye.
Feminazi over
That's
here.
Right.
Oh man, so I was on Bluetopia. And they had this, I'm so tempted, like the next time they have like a free leech, global free leech thing, I'm going to download it. It's the defeminized Marvel Avengers.
Yes.
To where all the women, all the women are removed. And per the description, all the gay shit is removed. And they specify gay shit.
Quote,
as,
like gay shit.
Yeah. They specify it as like any moment where two men are talking to each other for longer than 10 seconds.
Oh no.
And they cut it down from like the three and a half hour runtime to like an hour.
It has to be so confusing. Can you imagine just like watching it that way for the first time?
I want to, because I don't fucking watch those garbage movies.
Drew, you still haven't seen Endgame. There's your way to go back.
Yeah, I've seen all but Endgame.
still working your way through those?
Yeah. So you've seen all 22 or
just
the
Avengers?
Avengers
movies, I mean.
I don't know.
Yeah, not all the other like side stories and all that kind of shit. Just strictly the Avengers movies.
Since we're rolling, I kind of
want... we're rolling right now?
Nah, yeah, we are.
Oh, fuck.
We always do a soft
You guys got
roll.
Me canceled.
Yeah. hashtag cancel Glenn.
This is the Average Joe Movie Show, brought to you by Cinematique. See that? Slammed it for you.
Thank
we
you.
Have Lexi here. Hi. We have Glenn, who's a new guy here. We'll get into him in just a second.
Boo.
Boobs. Wait.
No, I said boo.
Whoa. My mind's somewhere else. And we have Drew back in action, even though he was here last week.
So. Boobs.
Oh, but it's I am shifting back to Glenn. You hate all Marvel. Why? Why do you hate them?
Oh man, that's a loaded question.
He hates what they stand for.
Heroes.
He hasn't seen the movies.
He's probably seen like. How many have you seen? And to have your sample size to hate every one of them.
Here's the thing: I don't quite have a. So one issue that I have is that the Disney Corporation has a monopoly on heroic stories at this point. You know,
true.
It used to be you would read things like Gilgamesh, Achilles, in the Iliad or the Odyssey, and all we got now is these fucking goofy spandex motherfuckers that have gained popularity, and Disney owns that along with most other media. At which point, so if that's effectively the zeitgeist, it's a really fucking sad zeitgeist. You got, I really liked Mark Maron was on some late night talk show that he got a lot of shit for, where he said something to the lines of you know, I miss a time when I could go into a movie theater with adults, watch an adult movie with adults, and come out and say, what the fuck just happened, what did we watch? And it's all, I mean, all cinema is formulaic at this point, even indie cinema, but it's to have the beats hit so precise every time is
You're good.
Okay.
we got some air noise in the back. I think if you want to just be just slightly a little closer, that's it. So he just needs to turn you down.
All right.
What when you like? I agree that all those movies hit the same beats, but like, how big of a role does that play in their popularity? Is that why they're so big? Because people know that they're exactly what they're going to get walking into a movie. There's no real anticipation or. What
depends on how cynical of an answer you want from me.
I want the most.
I'll take
cynical.
The most cynical. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Because I feel like that would be the most honest.
You know how many viewers we get? 36. We might have 40 by the end of this. So
I don't think I can handle 40 people coming at me at once.
You got it.
It's less inquiring. You don't have to pay as much attention watching a Marvel movie because you've heard some version of that story already, be it you read the comic books as a kid or simply through cultural osmosis. So I think what draws most into these movies is their spectacle. For one, you're watching shit on a beige tarmac just blow up. But, you know, it's I appreciate the accessibility, but I always feel that I mentioned earlier, just rule of thumb, half starring anyone that I've seen on Letterboxd. Just to kind of balance it, because you have people who are arguing at this point that this is pure cinema, and if that's the state of the union, I don't want to be in the union.
Yeah, right.
But no, I mean, it's I've seen a couple of them. I watched Infinity War, and it was a good time, but it was like I don't know. It's like
I think that's the best it got. You know, so you watched. I feel like the best one that they had.
Well, I liked the. One of the earlier Avengers ones probably came out in 2011, if I remember right.
The Ultron with James Spader?
I don't fucking remember, man.
The
one where the Hulk says that line that every 17-year-old edgelord probably loved, the, you know my secret? I'm always angry.
Oh, yeah. It is the first one. Yeah. 2011. Yeah.
They're fun, but it always feels like a tremendous waste of time exit the ride.
Yeah. so you agree with Martin Scorsese. You're just like, they're theme park things.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a bad thing, and I don't think he meant it in a derogatory fashion either. I just think it's this everything becomes so polarized, you know. It's even things that I like, dude. I like fucking boring European movies. I love them with all my heart, but I can sit there and rip on them. And it's
right.
The fact that the amount of insecurity that goes into any sort of fandom is...
That's it.
It's ridiculous.
You know, that's... all my friends make... Well, all the friends that don't really watch movies that listen to the podcast just because they're friends with me, they're like, why do you like Godzilla so much? I'm like...
Godzilla was a fucking good time.
Yeah.
Granted, I wish we would go back to grown men in rubber suits
wrestling
and knocking down fucking cardboard facades. But, you know, it's we're in the age of CG, and that's fine. And
yeah.
I had a great time with it. I think from a script writing standpoint, it was... really milquetoast, but
I
didn't come for that.
Yeah, I take it as face value. I wanted to see a bunch of monsters fight each other, and that's what I got.
It was cool to see King Ghidorah. I mean, I can't wait to watch him and old Kong go at it. Hopefully that'll mean Universal will start doing movie rides again.
Yeah.
To fucking God. Harry Potter ride the book bullshit.
Dude, well, they are riding that hard. You know, they did just release the patent, all the plans for their Epic Center, and they have the Universal Monsters theme. They're having all...
Good.
Yeah, they're bringing all them. Frankenstein, I think, is going to have an exit. And that's their big attraction. So it's going to be a Frankenstein ride.
Ooh.
And then, you know, then others.
I can't wait for the Van Helsing ride, totally.
I'm picturing like very like unsafe wooden roller coasters for the classic monsters.
See, and that's almost like a good allegory for what I want out of cinema. I want the rickety wooden roller coaster that's about to fall apart.
Yeah, there you go. has there ever been like, did you like Blade or any of those other movies or even?
Dude, we were talking about this last night. I fucking love Blade.
No, see?
So, okay, and here's the thing. I think it's more of a, I'm not an MCU guy.
Okay.
Like the Sony Venom that came out.
Yeah.
Fucking phenomenal. It's horse shit, but it's phenomenal horse shit. It plays exactly like a late 90s, early 2000s action film. And that's what I want. I want something that looks like it was fucking made for TV.
Okay.
So I saw like one of the earlier set photos of Venom 2 come out, and
yeah, that's right. That's
I will faithfully go and watch it. It's not that I'm better than any of these movies. I mean, for fuck's sake, was it 2018, 2017? One of my favorite movies of the year was Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
So it's I'm no snob by any means, but it's just you know, it's most people who I approach with the Marvel conversation don't have much to say about it. If you don't have much to say about whatever, then, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's, you know, I always think that they're entertaining. I think they won't stand the test of time, you know, culturally either. I think it's like, this is the moment, and it will kind of end, you know, just like, you know, Harry Potter, you know. It's going to be... Actually, I don't know. Do you think of any sort of timeless franchises as of recent? No?
Well, it's all rehashed at this point. I mean, we're seeing, what, like a new Halloween, a new Friday the 13th come out every few years. And I feel like in another 8 years, it's just going to happen all over again.
We're not allowing things to be timeless because we just have to keep making them again and again.
Yeah. You know... I'd say probably Harry Potter will probably stand the test of time. I don't think Marvel. I think Marvel has peaked. Know exactly where it ended. If they can build it up again, because they got to start from the bottom once again. So, in my opinion, and obviously I'm sick of those movies already. So,
well, I think fantasy storylines have always stood the test of time in general. You know, a lot of these Harry Potter's not a good example, but like, you know, Lord of the Rings or Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, like all that kind of, you know, Alice in Wonderland, whatever. Yeah, we rehash it, but like they've always, those stories stick around because they're always going to be intangible. Like there's things that are so whimsical that are going to be intangible. It's not like science fiction where we like it becomes outdated and it's like, oh, well that shit happened like 20 years ago, you know? But now we're in a position with CGI and stuff like that. As much as I bash CGI, but we're actually capable of bringing some of this imaginary stuff and fantasy stories to life, you know, like in the Harry Potter movies. So maybe these movies will stand the test.
The Potter
of time,
movies,
you know?
Did it well.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of Tim Burton ejaculating all over the Alice movies.
Me neither.
But I'm not much of a Burton fan to begin with. You know, and there's powers that be that have influence on this, but a lot of what we're seeing come with fantasy films, I think it would be a great service for a lot of these production companies and a lot of these directors and everyone on the conceptual end to really just kind of, you know, harken back to classical surrealism, you know, like André Breton, or thinking about, okay, what's his name? Cocteau. Cocteau with La Belle et la Bête. And, you know, it would be much better than, you know, fucking big headed queen rolling around and in the Candyland set.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good start to the show. I like that. See, and that was Glenn. He actually works here at Cinematique and is also a cinephile like the rest of us. Way more than me, I would say that. He should be hosting the show.
Well, like I said, I have no friends and ample time.
Movies are life.
Movies are my friends.
Yes, that's
well,
right.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just, it's a removal from reality. Watching cinema is the ultimate removal from reality. So it's, you know, you get to see a lot that you don't see driving down A1A, although I see a lot driving down A1A.
A lot of shit we don't want to see.
Yeah. Oh, no, me, I bathe in that shit, man. I was talking to Shane and Lexi last night at your birthday party. It's just watching the ecotones of poverty is just, you know, it's an experience, to say the least.
Well, last night was an experience to me because it was my birthday. I don't remember an hour of it, but apparently I puked 3 times. Shane was, I was on him pretty much most of the night, sexually, just kidding.
The first thing you said to me, I walk in and, what movie are we watching tomorrow? And then it was, I just threw up 2 times, to which I said, you're making more room. Oh, no.
What is that?
That's such a voyeuristic shot, too. Holy shit.
Is that a
video? Oh yeah, the video from outside the door.
Shane has
that's dirty
videotaped Matt puking through a cracked bathroom door.
And if you pay us on Patreon,
yeah,
you could see it for yourself.
Oh yeah, let's post the video.
I think when I showed up, the first thing you said to me was, "Oh!" Just pointed at me, and the second thing you said was, I already puked two times, dude. Yep.
So there's a rhythm here. Yeah.
That was the first thing you said to me. You said that you puked two times, and then you gave me your business cards. Like, Matt, I know you.
I was networking with the people that are... Well, I got a podcast. Yeah, man, I'm on it.
You went through all your cards, right? You gave them all away?
Yep. I was doing work. Little did everybody know. So
you know, you got, you know, grassroots, get in the trenches.
Yeah, it was rough.
It was a good time though, and that's coming from somebody who hates leaving the house.
Fuck yeah, see, we got it made.
The staff that works at that bar is very
mortified.
They have a lot of patience.
Yeah, they understand.
They put up with a lot.
Oh man, well,
for 4 years now.
Okay,
so they understood.
They have it marked on their calendar. It's like your birthday.
All I gotta say is, I work in a bar, and when somebody's on the verge of puking, we don't go and get them a puke bucket and let them sit in the middle of the room and have them be the center focus while everybody sits around and eats chicken wings around them. You know, that's not how it works in my bar. So yes, they have patience.
Also, there was a baby in there, like watching. Oh my gosh,
I took a picture of it and sent it to somebody. I said, "Fuck it, baby at the bar," yeah. And they responded, "Yeah, babies need to unwind too."
It was a keg and milk, man. Yeah. Keg and milk party.
Well, I think it was Shane who told me at one point you just picked up a beer and just turned it over and started pouring it on the table.
And everyone I wish I would have seen that. Was very drunk, and you could tell because they weren't trying to stop you from pouring the beer on the table. They were trying to mop it up with paper towels whilst you're pouring the beer. Like, somebody just take the beer away.
The more I talk about this party, the more I learn, because I don't remember any of that.
Aww. That was a killer Joy Division girl shirt that you had, though.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to you, I said, I'm a bigger fan of New Order, but I admire it. And I don't think you heard.
Was that a conscious like choice that you made to wear that shirt, like that's your party shirt, or was it just any shirt will do?
I was wearing it for 2 days, and uh-huh. I'm just like, you know, this, I'm not even gonna be bothering about showering because I'm just gonna smell like puke, so didn't matter. That's what it did. So, yeah, because I had a party earlier that day that I went to. Buddy, his name is also Matt. He has a leap year birthday, and he wanted a whole bounce house and everything like that. So I got drunk there, and then I sobered up for like a couple hours at home, and then I left to my buddy's Dom's house, who you had the conversation with, and we were just like. He's like, I'm not there. I was like, well, I'm going to be. He was like, okay. I'm like, so, you know, I have his.
So all in all, was it a good birthday?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was awesome.
Fuck yeah.
So
I knew it was going to be interesting when you posted on Facebook that you would be drinking energy drinks
I got to talk to you about
that. To get
that.
Ready for drinking alcohol all night.
I got really concerned with
like,
Lexi.
Yeah,
he's going to have a fucking heart attack.
He's going to die.
Maybe next year, just like go out and buy like a loaf of the Dave's Killer Bread so you can like carb up and you're getting protein while you're doing it too.
Oh gosh, that's a good idea. So
you're an EMT though. Can you revive yourself?
I was way gone.
Would you do it like Pulp Fiction style? Would you just...
Yes.
All right. Somebody just let this drop. Going right in there. Oh gosh, it was a good time. It was great to see everybody for the time that I remember. But I was actually the longest I've lasted. Last year was 30 minutes.
Do you attribute that to age? Are you getting stronger in your years?
Yeah, right, that's true. It's a good question. The first answer I want to say is no. But then I want to be like, well, maybe. No. I suck. You know, once I say I'm going to black out, it's the phrase black out or back out.
Oh, okay.
So it's just there, you know. But I thank everybody for taking care of me, and I hope everybody had a good time. And if I confessed my love to you, that means I really like you. So did I do it to any of you guys? I confess... Shane, what did I say?
He said, because we were isolated from the main group.
Oh, is that when I sucked your dick?
Yeah, so when you came over to our group, you were like,
we were like, yeah, we don't know anybody. So we're sitting over here. It's like, yeah, those are all my coworkers and they're great. And, but I really love you guys. And especially you too. I was like, oh, okay, that's really nice.
I say this with much appreciation. If you would have confessed that to me, I would have said, I think I really just view you as a friend.
I would have just said, gay.
Well.
And then Hillary Duff would have just crawled out of the woodwork. Do you all ever see that PSA of her? It's like these two younger women in a clothing store. And this girl's like, yeah, the top's so gay. It's totally gay. And then Hillary Duff just walks up and goes, you shouldn't say that. How would you feel if I said, that shirt's so girl with blonde hair? And then the friend goes, oh, shit.
Yeah. I remember when they were taking those out, because who was the other one? Macy Gray was on one of them, too? Mm-hmm. No, what was it? Who's a comedian?
Was it another Disney PSA?
No, it was...
The more you know.
Gosh, what was her name? She was in... Clerks 2, when she was ordering the fries, and when Randall said porch monkey, and the girl in front, she goes, what was her name? God, she was a comedian.
I haven't seen Clerks 2 in 15 years.
Don't worry, Shane, we're taking it back. This is Clerks 2.
Is that Janine Garofalo?
No,
is
she's in white. Clerks 2? Huh? She was in Dogma. Yeah. So, we're about, Shane's about to look it up right now. So, but okay, too much airspace. I can't figure it out. No, it wasn't one of the main characters. She was just a cameo. So I can't. Oh, yeah, Wanda Sykes. That was it.
Oh God.
Oh fuck.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
God.
So I was terrible. Hints. I was talking about Wanda Sykes yesterday. Actually, let me.
You had a conversation about Wanda Sykes yesterday?
Yeah, sorry, I'm fucking... I guess. Because I think, wasn't she in the episode of Curb?
Yeah.
Where she's walking down the street and Larry David goes, I'd recognize that tush anywhere. And then for the rest of the episode, they're talking about how he has an ass fetish.
That's where the ass man came from.
Wait, is ass fetish a thing, or I just thought everybody had an ass fetish?
there's people that do that.
I think there's a whole website devoted to it.
Oh, okay.
There's a Reddit blog. I know that much.
All right.
So,
anyway,
man, we just barreled right into there. It was awesome. But no, okay. So the story I was trying to make about Wanda Sykes is that she did it. Some guy's like, it was like the same thing. It was like, you say that's gay. It was like, how would you like it if I, you know, said, oh, that sounds like your mediocre living off your parents' house look, something like that. I was like, that doesn't sound insulting at all, actually.
That sounds stupid.
Yeah. It was like, this sounds gay. That's just what it reminded me of. I don't know. And I'm moving on. So we lost all of our listeners, especially one. I know exactly who it is.
Well, now have negative one listener.
Yeah, negative one at least. So we saw The Invisible Man this weekend. Did you?
No. I did not see it, no. No. But I'm very much looking forward to it. Elizabeth Moss is one of my favorite actresses of all time.
Yeah. Did you, Glenn, did you see Invisible Man at all this weekend?
No.
Did you have any desire to see it? Do you have any desire to see it? You can get it. Yeah, get into it, man.
I only found out about it a few days ago, actually.
Oh, really?
When everyone started buzzing about it. Yeah. I mean, it's... I've heard polarizing reviews. I've heard a couple of people who I admire say they really liked it. So I'll eventually get around to it.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's I got other things that are in my watch list before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, myself, Shane, Drew, did we saw it with Mike? Yeah, Mike was there. And did Mike like the movie? I don't know if he said he liked it. Yeah? Okay. Well, I come to the conclusion that I loved that movie. We always thought it was great. you know, like
when what about
I,
it?
Like, what did I like about it? Like, it just was, it had so many chances to do cheap scares and it didn't. And it actually added to the tension. I was like, oh, here it comes. Oh, it didn't come. Well, maybe it'll come now. Maybe something. You know, you could guess a lot of these movies, especially with Blumhouse movies. You're just like, oh, it's coming a mile away. And Leigh Whannell is such a good filmmaker that he understands that and he uses that against you in this movie of just like, after a certain point, you're looking at every spot of the frame to spot him. And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
But he's invisible.
Like if you see like something like curved like a seat, you know, like, oh, he sat down right there.
I figured as much.
Yeah. And he's just being a dick.
Yeah. After a while, like my eyes were like burning. I was like, holy shit, I haven't blinked in a long time. You know, like they actually do create that, like that aesthetic, you know, you feel like you can't blink watching the movie. But I agree that there are, I didn't really think about it. And so you said it, there really were no like cheap scares, you know. It was like he was trying to bring back like good old fashioned suspense, you know, like dating, the original Halloween comes to mind or something like that, where like everything didn't have to be so rapid fire to like please modern audiences, you know, that didn't have attention spans or whatever, you know. It was just like when they would start a scene that was absolute suspense building, I felt like he carried it on like a little longer than you would expect to see in most modern movies. And I appreciated that aspect. And it didn't become tiresome. I wasn't like, all right, let's get on with this. It was like, it maintained its suspenseful qualities. You know, it was pretty cool in that respect, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. In the very beginning, you're just like, it starts like she's trying, you know, the basis of this Invisible Man is that, Elizabeth Moss plays pretty much an abused girlfriend, yeah, and she tries to leave, and it, like from the very beginning, just leaving them, and it's just super suspenseful. And you know, there's a couple of jump scares like right in the beginning, and you're just like, God, fucking damn it, it fucking got me this early. You know, it's just you were very much,
and you feel that resentment because you like yelled at the top of your lungs in the theater.
I don't think I've ever done that. Trying to think of a movie that's ever done that to me.
Never for me.
Not yet.
Never.
No, not yet.
Y'all aren't living.
nothing will beat the reaction you did with Uncut
Gems. I was gonna say, I think, yeah, that's...
we all heard that one.
Yeah. Dude, I felt more comfortable doing that because it was just Lexi and I in the theater.
Dying.
Yeah, it was...
Best reaction.
No, that was a little different than because that was a holy shit. Like, you have that actually had words to it, but like something that scares you to the point, startles you in a film that actually, like, you emit vocal, you know, something vocally.
Yeah.
Like, I've never had that happen, you know, yeah. But I'm pretty sure I reacted out loud when the car accident scene in Hereditary occurred. It like disturbed me and like fucking caught me so off guard, more so than anything I had seen in recent years. I'm pretty sure something came out of my mouth. Yeah. I don't remember what.
I
probably
laughed.
Holy shit.
I laughed so hard at that scene in Hereditary. I have this really bad habit. It was also when y'all did your summer podcast series with Reservoir Dogs. That torture scene in the middle of the movie, dead silent auditorium, me sitting in here laughing at the top of my lungs.
Talking in the air. Hey, it's
that you. Scene's hilarious.
Yeah, and it's like, I forget what kill scene it is, but a year or so ago, I went to the NZN to go see The Thing, 35mm print.
Mm-hmm.
And again, one of the most gruesome parts in the scene, dead silent theater. Your boy laughing at ear-shattering decibels. But no, I tell Alexi all the time, Hereditary, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of it by and large, but the two scenes, the one being the...
Yeah.
And towards the end, where Toni Collette is suspended in the treehouse, just sawing at her neck.
Yeah.
Oh.
You could sell me on that movie on those two scenes alone.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's a fucking Bob Clampett cartoon. It's a fucking Looney Tune, like, and it's, I wish everyone would stop trying to sell Ari Aster on this like new master of horror. Just be like, yo, homeboy's watching Looney Tunes, come and check this out. Yeah. Wait, Ari, if you're listening to this, and I know you are, come on, man, let's get some more of that action in your next flick.
Yeah. He seems to have a really dark, sick sense of humor, and like people don't know how to respond to it. You know, like you're watching his movie and you don't know how you're supposed to feel. It's like,
yeah,
a lot of time, like in Midsommar and stuff like that. It's like, oh, this is pretty fucking funny to me right now, but it's also fucked up at the same time. I don't know if I start laughing, am I doing the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Like, no, you're not. If you look up Ari Aster and like what kind of person he is, he's got that sense of humor that like applies to that.
You know? Sure. And it's, yeah, and I get that. It's because it's most people would run up to like, I didn't think to laugh at that. But my friends who saw it, for me, with a lot of these movies, and this kind of ties into why I haven't seen Invisible Man, I just have to wait for the hype to die down. Because if everyone's selling like Hereditary, I'm glad that I did wait. I waited like a year and a half to watch it. Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Since it came out? Yeah. Mostly because if I would have seen that amidst all of everyone talking about it, I would have hated it. Because it's not as good as everyone says it is.
But I still can't watch No Country for Old Men because of the hype.
Well, your time will come. You know, one day people will stop talking about it. Yeah. But yeah, I haven't seen Midsommar on the same thing. I'm sure I will like Midsommar, just as I thought Hereditary is fine, you know. But it's also this whole... There's a great article, this one guy I know wrote about it, this whole, like, elevated horror, which let's just call for what it's gentrified horror. It's people who did not grow up watching gore movies, slasher movies, or even smarter horror films, who now that it's contemporary to walk around wearing your Black Craft cult shirt or whatever, you know, it's this whole idea, oh, well, I can like this horror film because it's smart. And it's, I would argue that, I mean, I know this is obvious at this point, but there's a far stronger cultural argument and analysis in something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre than a fucking movie like It Follows or Hereditary. Hereditary, they could have shaved like 30 minutes off of it easily and it would have been a much stronger film. And part of that whole gentrification of cinema aspect, it falls under this, a quote that I read online when it was, there's a new cut of Midsommar hitting theaters and it's even longer now. And homeboy was just like, man, the bourgeoisie really want their children to be dull. Yeah. And it's the return to form we need to see is that you can fit a full story and a good one at that in 90 minutes.
I'll
be honest. I heard about the extended cut of Midsommar and I was like, I don't need to watch a longer version of that movie.
It's a fucking marketing ploy. It's
maybe it's better. I don't know. I didn't see it, but when I heard that, I was like, I don't know that I need to watch a longer version of that movie.
It felt long. Like I haven't seen the original cut, like the theatrical release, but after a while, I felt like I was ready for the movie to end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ugh, and what a terrible way to feel, too, right? When you're just waiting for the end, it just becomes a chore. Yeah. I have a question for Glenn, kind of circling back to avoiding movies specifically because of the hype train that surrounds them. Can you recall a time where you like ran to the theater to see a movie on opening weekend and what movie that might have been?
If he says Avengers, I'm going to laugh at him.
Avengers Endgame.
opening night Thursday. Well,
the closest that I ever got to something like that might have been it was happenstance, really. I got tickets to a preview screening of Lords of Dogtown when it came out, and that was something I was really excited for. But mind you,
that was so long ago.
Yeah, I was a child.
It was like 10 years ago?
So it was more of like my parents were like, let's go do that. Yeah, way longer than 10 years ago. I was
probably 12 years ago, something like that.
Than that. I
was at least 2005.
I had to have been
16.
I had to have been like 9, 10 years old when that came out. So it was a minute, and I'm about to be 26. So no, there's not too much that I rush for, just because it's... I mean, I do similar with companies that are finding and re-releasing a lot of these pictures. It's, everything falls under a marketing ploy. So people are going to gas things up way more than they need to be. And I don't think you can get a fair analysis on that basis. And it's, even movies that I really look forward to seeing, I'll hold off on. I mean, we showed Uncut Gems, so I watched Uncut Gems, but I was totally prepared to wait a year to watch it. I mean, I still haven't seen Parasite, controversial opinion, but yeah.
I haven't seen it either. I bought it, but I didn't see it yet.
I must just be really good at like not listening to the hype, or like I must just be completely
Do you make
a point to avoid reading about films before they come out? Or?
Yeah, okay. I do. So that might be part of it. But like somehow I'm just like oblivious to the hype or something like that, because generally speaking, like really the only time I've ever rushed to see a movie, like opening that Friday night, whatever, at a theater or early if they do an early screening, is if there's like something that it's a filmmaker that I admire a lot, you know, it's a new Tarantino film or it's Rob Zombie or like it's somebody that I just like a lot. It's never based on hype. I can't remember the last time I was like, oh shit, so they hyped this movie up so much, I need to go and see it.
I don't think it's a conscious minded thing on most people's part. And, you know, I will say I'm just patient as well. I was really looking forward to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and I waited a couple weeks, but I went and saw it twice in theaters, which I don't remember the last time I did. Oh, I did rush to see Don't Mess With the Zohan when it came out.
Yes. What an underrated
movie. No, it's horrible.
Movie.
It's horrible.
But it's so much fun.
It was a joke.
It
was a joke.
It's so entertaining. No,
she's dead serious. I haven't seen it.
Anytime that I'm like scrolling through, if I'm watching cable and that's on, I'll put it on in the background. I'm totally fine with it.
Don't Mess With the Zohan.
I mean, it was one of those things where I just remember that being something where middle school friends were like, we're going to go see that. And me sitting in the theater, like, being like, what the fuck is happening? I don't think there's too many people who are like, insert hype, me go see movie now. Yeah. I would hope people don't think like that, but it's fuck, man. Yeah, no, I've always kind of had that degree of patience with everything. It's not like I'm going and reading a film comment article and going, well, I'm not going to go see that now. It's for me, like I commented earlier, I have a pretty large watch list and there's just things that I'm more interested in. Just following through on just things that speak more to my cinematic obsessions, that if they became more represented, more represented in the mainstream cinemas, then I'd be more likely to engage. But and I think that's why Once Upon a Time worked for me in that way, is just because it's a fucking nerd's paradise, that movie, just watching everything.
I got you beat. I saw it 3 times in theaters.
Fuck yeah.
I'm with you on that.
We're on the same boat. I still gotta give you that poster. I did give you the poster, right?
Yeah.
Do you want the postcards? I have the postcards from the Blu-ray.
Did you buy the one with the vinyl in it?
No, because it's too much money and fuck that.
Speaking of that, I did buy the Blu-ray for him for Christmas, but I don't think it has the postcards.
Yeah, I was interested in the Walmart edition because it had the postcards in it, but as soon as I got them, I was like, I don't fucking need these, so if you want them, I'm trying to unload them so I don't have to throw them away.
Nice.
Gotcha. That's right. I got to buy some stuff from you. We're going to get into that later, the buying and the discussion.
The auction on the air.
I'm going to buy them right now. I was just thinking about, damn it, I've just fucking forgot it. So you said something about, you know, certain people liking certain movies just because they're obscure. Like, you didn't really say it, and I obviously paraphrasing, but
sure.
It just reminded me of the trip I took to Atlanta, because I flew there like an idiot. I'm never flying there again. I'm driving every time.
Why not? It's like a 55-minute flight, isn't it?
Yeah, it's also an hour drive to Orlando, an hour wait. It gets delayed, but...
But you get to feel fancy being on a plane.
You can fly out of Daytona. Delta fly straight
through. $200 more.
Fucking pay it, dude.
Just pay it, bro.
Do you want to ball out the or bullshit?
How much is your time worth?
Exactly. There it is.
That's usually how it works for me.
Straight through for $200 more versus the extra 4-hour wait or whatever.
Stop being so poor.
Stop being so average Joe. So we're on our way back, and I'm listening to this fucking guy in front of me. He's just everything was just bullshit And then he's like, my favorite horror movie has got to be the Babadook. I'm just like, shut the fuck up, dude. Probably your second favorite. It's It Follows or something.
And then you got in a fist fight on the plane, right?
Dude, I want, that's when I texted him. I was like, this guy's an idiot. I was just like, what? Just please stop talking. He's like, yeah, it's just about grief and just all the, you know. And he knew what all the reviewers were saying about the film rather than his own opinion, which infuriates me even more. Like, it's just like you're just borrowing these opinions, man. Mm-hmm. Like, these aren't yours.
Well, yeah. What pissed me off more is I know he didn't cite via MLA format.
Yeah. I'm just right. Like, I mean, I don't mind that movie at all, but I'm just like, out of all the movies, all the horror movies in the world, you just, boom, right there. I should have even called it, you know, just the way he was just all about. He's like, anti, that first thing that pissed me off, he's like, dude, all these corporations are running us down. And then he puts in his fucking AirPods and takes his iPhone 11 out. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude.
And he was listening to His Hero Is Gone while he was at it.
I'm just like, ugh. But back to The Invisible Man, though. I've made this statement once before, maybe on the show, but James Wan, I feel like, is an inferior filmmaker compared to Leigh Whannell, because I think James Wan is only as good as Leigh Whannell's storytelling and his script writing, because all of his films, if you look at it, all of James Wan's films that he's done with Leigh Whannell are all fantastic. He did Insidious with him. He wrote Insidious. He wrote Saw. He wrote The Conjuring. He wrote The Conjuring 2. And then motherfucker James Wan, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go make Fast and Furious 9 or whatever the fuck he did, or Fast 5, and then he makes Aquaman, two trash movies. Like, I'm just like, bro, get back with your boy. Your boy's making you look fucking bad.
He's making money moves at this point.
Then Leigh Whannell makes, you ever seen Cooties?
Mm-mm.
Is this
no
God, who's the guy that played Dwight in The Office?
Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, Rainn Wilson's in it, and he's awesome. It's just they're in this elementary school, and the nuggets that come in are sour, and they turn all the kids into fucking zombies. So he wrote that film, which was just a real fun movie. He also acted in it, too, with Elijah Wood. And then he makes Upgrade, which was also a phenomenal movie. You know, but he made it for $4 million. He also made Invisible Man for $9 million.
Wow, really?
And it already made $30 million in one weekend.
$9 million to make?
To make The Invisible Man.
Is The Invisible Man a Blumhouse joint?
Yeah. And you can tell, you can always tell when Jason Blum gets involved in film. And it's trash. I hope I never meet him because he'll probably hate my guts.
He'll stab you.
So,
for sure.
Well, I gotta ask. I mean, are you typically a fan of like older exploitation movies and like Full Moon, Charles Band, and all that? Because I mean, the way that I see it, Blumhouse is just doing that.
They're just pumping out films for, you know. I feel like Jason Blum does things more as a business, which is fine. He does it well.
But I mean, it's all business.
Yeah. True. Well, I mean, hopefully the creators who make the film, you know, they want to do it for their art more than the mm-hmm. money, you know. But I understand producer's job is you know, executive producer's all about
just,
money.
It's because a lot of it just seems very Corman-esque, which I kind of get stoked on, even though the quality of the films aren't always there. I'm really curious to see how we look at these works 20, 30 years from now, provided we're still alive. So it's because I get it. What was the Truth or Dare? Was that one of the more recent ones that I watched on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking trash. And but I wouldn't say I hate the guy doing that. And not like I'm not saying feel free to hate him, but just because I have that reaction. It's a primitive instinct.
Yeah.
But it's after a minute, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, well, you know, we celebrate all of these weird movies and the kind of the niche cultures. But I mean, I'm certain that it was viewed similarly at the time.
Yeah.
So it's not that I still think Truth or Dare is fucking garbage, but it's on that. It was a newfound appreciation because I'd rather see these kind of garbage films littering the theater. Okay. If that makes sense, it's just it's a little more exciting. It feels more like a gamble.
Yeah, I see your point, and that's a good point to make. It's just like when I'm looking at like previews to Truth or Dare or this Countdown or whatever the fuck it was, you're just like, that looks like trash, and I'm not gonna see it.
Well, I think there's part of me that loves seeing stupid young people get murked. So it's,
and then you know, when I see something with maybe a cool concept, you're just like, all right, what's it rated? PG-13. I'm not gonna fucking watch this
I'm
movie.
So guilty of that too.
I am a ratings bitch.
Yeah.
if it's a horror movie and it's rated anything less than R, I am pissed.
Look at every great horror film ever made. All of the greatest horror, none of them were PG-13.
I'm gonna have to say, as a baby who loves my baby streaming service, Disney Plus, y'all got to watch Mr. Boogity. That is a rated G horror movie, and it's such a fucking good time. It's nice. Like, I swear, motherfuckers were watching How Sue while they were like coming up with a concept for the movie. Nice. It's so fun.
That movie's crazy.
But no, I mean, if it's not unrated, I typically just kind of,
yeah,
you know,
there you go.
I need there to be no rules.
You don't want those confines in that genre. You shouldn't, there should not be those limitations, you know?
Well, then how do we all feel about torture porn then?
Like Saw 3 through,
yeah, how
or
are we feeling about that? Where it sits in the horror,
the opposite end of the spectrum where there literally just are no limitations whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, I think it can be taken a little too far and become a little
repetitive.
Absurd.
Eli Roth.
Yeah. Thank you.
That guy pisses me off too.
He knows his shit though,
dude. His podcast or the Histories of Horror stuff. When I was just like, damn. I just wish your voice wasn't annoying.
He does have an annoying voice.
That Cabin Fever commentary though.
Oh, Jesus. Well, what impressed me was when I heard him on the he was on the disc for Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. And I mean, granted, I think he got that position mostly because he knows Sergio Martino's daughter. I guess they went to NYU together. But
did that hurt you just saying that sentence?
NYU,
out loud?
Yeah.
Gross.
Matt, did you see Insidious Chapter 3?
No,
I didn't either, and I'm curious about it. And I did not realize until just now that Lee Winnell directed that.
That was from the hypes.
2015.
Yeah.
When I found out James Wan wasn't directing, being as close-minded as I am, I was like, oh, it's Lee Winnell. I was like, I'm not as interested now, you know. But so I need to go back and watch that one because that'd be like a prime example, right? Compare the first two Insidious movies to the one that Lee Winnell wrote and directed.
Yeah.
So I'd be really curious on that. But also, do you not think that Lee Winnell, now emerging as a screenwriter and director, do you not think he's capable of taking a Robert Rodriguez or James Wan turn and doing something for money in the future that's not going to be
his original
source material that might be a little more mainstream or something?
Well, The Invisible Man's pretty mainstream, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, when he took it and he took out a budget for $9 million, you know, you're just like, you know, take this in iconic Universal monster and, you know, remake it to your liking. And I'm like, all right, give me $9 million and I can do it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, it's not a jump to like,
$150 million.
Fast and the Furious 6 and friggin' Shark Boy and Lava Girl or something like that. It's not that big of a jump. At least it's like still holding true to like the origins of horror in cinema.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I've, you know, there's just, you know, I think, you know, I've listened to him quite a bit and he likes to hold a lot of creative freedom. So, you know,
How writers tend to be, and that's why they tend not to like to be directors, you know, because of the limitations that it poses, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times writers just kind of want to stay out of that role.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely, after seeing The Invisible Man, I'm really anxious to see what he's gonna do. I think it's gonna open up some more doors for him, you know, because he's obviously already experiencing some initial success, and I'm going to keep my eye on him for sure.
Yeah. He just signed a 2-year deal with Blumhouse for TV series and movies. Awesome. So, he's going to be doing a lot more. But yeah, I've ever since I actually saw, what was it? Cooties. I was just like, this guy. I like this guy. And yeah. then I started really focusing on what he was writing. And then, you know, I went back to Saw, and I'm just like, oh, man, he wrote this? And that's him right there. That's him. He's, yeah. you know.
A huge yeah. chunk of my favorite horror films that have come out in the past, like, decade and a half or whatever, you know, he was behind. You know, it's yeah. just pen and paper, you know, whatever. He was the writer. But I walked out of Saw saying, like, holy shit, like, that's one of my favorite horror films I've seen in years, if not of all time. You know, I was, like, so impressed by that. Mm-hmm. And... Game you know, over. Just going down the line, looking at, like, you know, Dead Silence and Insidious.
Oh, yeah, that's Cutter, right. Dead, like, Dead Silence.
Just go down the line, and, like, and it's like, wow, man, he's got, like, a really awesome body of work.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's been...
he's like, behind all of this. Yeah.
20-year sample size. I'm just like, you know, that, you know, it goes to show you where you go, you know. But not to say that he can't have any duds, you know. It's not like, you know, but... I see Doggy Heaven. Sorry, but yeah, that Glenn, you should see that movie in 2 years whenever you get around to it.
So just for that, four
on your deathbed. You
all around, I think you guys should check out The Invisible Man, though, for sure.
I'm interested.
I will.
I haven't read into much of the hype, like what you guys are talking about.
Except for the hype we just put on.
Yeah, I really haven't heard too much of it or whatever. I will say it does have its drawbacks. It's an imperfect film. It's very far fetched at times. It's a little ridiculous at times.
Yeah.
What he's capable of physically and just certain aspects were very. Unrealistic.
Well, it's, you know, the listener will be able to answer this for certain. I don't think I threw the Invisible Man under the hype train. I literally just the last over few days I've heard about it, and it was from trusted sources, people yeah. that I know. But I gotta compliment you, because the way you were just talking about it, I'm much more interested
yeah.
now than the blurbs that I read on Twitter or wherever.
Yeah.
Who do you go for, like, reviews? Like, if somebody reviews a movie, who do you go to?
Oh, fuck. It's hard to say because, again, I don't have too much invested in contemporary cinema as far as interest goes. I always check out Film Comment.
Okay.
They'll usually cover stuff that I like. And then there's this guy. His name is Henri de Corinth. He writes for a few publications. He writes for Mubi. He has some stuff featured on, I'm not even going to try to butcher the enunciation because it's an Italian website. It gets translated to English. But he has some of the most insightful and thought-provoking analysis that I've ever read. He's a really nice guy, too. He's currently writing a book about, God damn it, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation. Andrzej Jawlowski, who did Possession and a few of those favorites of horror weirdos. But yeah, and then other than that, I really admire the Twitter feeds of the Important Cinema Club folks, Justin DeClue and Will Sloan. They do a podcast called The Important Cinema Club.
Nice.
Really cool stuff. Other than that, Nick Pinkerton. He's a really fun commentary.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I was just like, do you watch any YouTube, like, reviewers?
Ooh. Lindsay Ellis. She's fucking great.
Is she one with the... Does the trailer reaction ones?
No. So she does a bunch of stuff, actually. She goes through literature, she goes through theater, she covers the gambit, but she does some interesting videos just unpacking the trajectory of certain films and the history of them.
Okay.
What I would recommend for just somebody approaching it, she did a series called The Whole Plate, where she explains film theory through James Cameron's Transformers. Which is so fun.
It sounds very exciting.
It's so fun. She's also, she did a great one on the Disney Hercules, a couple of other ones. Then
lesson number 96, AIM. Sorry, I had to get that out.
YouTube, though, there's another guy. What's his name?
I only listened to two. I was just going, you know,
oh, okay.
But you if you can think of his name, I was just like, your trusted sources are way more than mine. Like, you know, and when I disagree with them, I'm just like, fuck this guy. I'm the worst.
Oh, man.
I am the worst.
I love listening to people who I disagree with. That some people do blow, some people drink coffee. Dissenting opinions is where I get my rocks off.
When I disagree with someone, I just want to have a conversation with them. I'm just like, rather than just listening.
And by that, you mean beat the shit out of them. Like that motherfucker on your
flight.
That's
that one fucking guy. I was just like, fucking idiot. No, there's only two. There's one that kind of, his name is Chris Stuckman. I like him, but he went to film school and then changed.
It'll happen.
As one does.
God, I just hate it when film students review movies sometimes. It's just like,
it can be insightful, but typically, I mean, it's, you got to have the imagination to go along with it. It's one thing to know the jargon and know how to dissect a film, but
it can't be completely formulaic, you know. It's, you got to relate it to personal experience to some extent or whatever, and like have references, have comparisons.
Yes.
Like it can't just be a formulaic I understand. I completely. Every time you bring that up, man, I know exactly.
Well, one of my favorite people, actually, surprisingly enough, who I always love listening to their input on film is the Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek. He did a movie, two movies. One is called The Pervert's Guide to Ideology, where he tackles cinema and the effect that movies have on particularly American culture, really interesting stuff. And similarly, the Pervert's Guide to Cinema or Pervert's Guide to Film or something like that.
Okay.
He has some really interesting takes, but fuck, there was, when you were saying something, there was something that came to mind. Patrick Willem is that guy that I was forgetting, the YouTube guy.
Okay.
There's also the Renegade Cut. Does really interesting stuff.
I've heard of them.
One thing I want you to do for now on, because it would make me so happy to listen to, is, do you have Letterboxd?
No.
Do you go on IMDb at all?
Yeah.
So I think everyone should do this. Go to your favorite movies on movie social media sites and read the lowest rated reviews. Oh my fucking god, it's sublime.
I do, you know, whenever I'm like on Rotten Tomatoes, I don't really give a shit so much about the critic scores. The audience scores are where I really try to be, and I'm just like, let's see who thinks this movie's trash.
Well, after I watched High Life, I went and read all like the half star reviews.
I can only imagine.
Oh man,
how wonderful those must be.
Oh yeah, people love hating Claire Denis.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, well, it's, well, when I went to see Mandy in Orlando, it was right next to Full Sail, and I had these stupid fucking people behind me. They were film students, and they were just like,
No, they were Full Sail students. Let's be clear.
Did I say Full Sail?
You said it was right next to Full Sail.
You said film students, but... To clarify.
Come on. You're not a film student if you're going to Full Sail.
You're a film student.
You're just like, the first thing I was like, I bet this script is going to be just killer. I'm just like, yeah, that's all I really care about in this movie right now. I'm like, you're going to go see a movie starring Nick Cage, and you're gonna be all about the script. That's the only thing you're going to be about. Like, you know exactly what we're getting
into.
The guy
that's never been in a movie with a good script, ever.
But he is a phenomenal actor as far as how he tackles the form. Because it's...
when he grabs that fucking neck, when he's chugging that fucking vodka bottle, some of my favorite shit, man.
That was very...
Well, yeah, he is very hammy, and we love that. But it's he's gone on record talking about the theoretical end of acting and where certain trends in acting kind of died off, and how it sucks because the way he explains it is always way more grandiose than the final product. But the fact that you have somebody like that who is talking about the craft in such a manner, Oh my gosh.
Which surprises me, because I'll be honest, like, I'm not on board with Nicolas Cage, like as a straightforward, like, Oscar worthy, not, you know, role. Like, I like him as offbeat character actors. Like, I love all of his.
Well, and that's,
know,
where
I love those kind of performances.
Yeah. Leaving Las Vegas, babe.
So that kind of makes you think, maybe like the average audience viewer, maybe myself, maybe I've been just like kind of ignorant at times, like, oh, that'd be so easy to just do something like so goofy and over the top and ridiculous, but maybe it takes a lot more to accomplish something like his character in Raising Arizona.
I feel like a lot of it is how we perceive what acting should be, and what stuck out to me was saying things like Oscar worthy, which I think especially at this point is a terrible gauge of what is valuable. And I say this as somebody who, you know, there's plenty of important things that do not get the attention that they deserve. I know that goes without saying, but for Cage, it's not even just like a, let's see how I can make this transgressive or make this goofy, but rather him talking about like bringing in elements of German impressionism or expressionism into his acting, and kabuki styles, and just lost crafts that you would probably expect to see in like a fucking Janus film, but he's trying to exact in goddamn Ghost Rider. It's so for somebody
you're pigeonholing him, right? Mm-hmm. That well, not you as in Hollywood did.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that just doesn't translate well for people that don't realize what he's trying to achieve.
It takes the homework. You know? You gotta do the homework. Yeah. And this is something that I just became privy to over the last few months myself. So I've always enjoyed him just because I think he's a great presence. And I admire the hustle. Motherfucker owes the government a lot of money. So he's just like, let me grind out these films. And it sucks because you almost see happening with him like Werner Herzog, where he almost just plays into the memification of himself. So it's you're not getting these interesting appearances anymore, but rather he's either going way over the top like Mandy, or he's
Color
kinda,
Out of Space. Have you seen it yet?
Not yet. I have it downloaded. Right,
well,
but
I won't
it's
say
not,
too much.
Yeah, I heard it's not that good.
I did buy it blindly.
Matt, we got to get you pirating, man.
We're going to talk about
it. It's not that good. I'll leave it at that. And it is a very interesting over-the-top performance by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and that's why it's almost like how you see like Herzog going on stuff now and how he plays into his caricature. It's It was way fun. It was way more fun like 10 years ago when it was like they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if Nick Cage like he feels like he has that to live up to, and he plays into that, and he has fun with it because of that. You know, it's not just like he is this actor with these qualities that are always going to be so like at times he always has like one or two just like breakdown scenes. You know, we've all seen like the fun the Nicolas Cage like freak out moments, like montage video or whatever,
and that's why
like,
he does it.
There's two of those in Color Out of Space, and one of them is like, I mean, it's maybe the most significant freak out scene he's ever had. Like,
sure.
It's insane,
and,
you know?
And that's where he understands that people are going to share that gif of him as a reaction on Facebook or whatever. So it's good for his career, but it's not good for us as people who look at the form itself. Because then it's, you know, Joe Schmo will be stoked on it as he was with the fucking, you know, with his performance in
Wicker Man
earlier films, but
the bees, the
bees. But yeah, it kind of sucks because it's for somebody who has so much to say about the craft, and he's no idiot.
Yeah,
it's but I respect the hustle, is what it comes
Do
down
you
to
have me. A favorite Nicolas Cage performance that you want to shout out?
I don't mind.
Let's hear it.
Raising Arizona.
All right. Anybody else?
I love that adaptation.
You know what I want to say?
My favorite thing is Face Off.
You know what I want to say, because I need to relate to the everyman. National Treasures 1 and 2. That's all you're getting out of me.
Still Declaration of Independence.
Dude, in high school, we had to watch both those fucking movies. Such a good time. I had way more fun with that than I did when we had to watch G.I. Joe.
Man. Oh, gosh.
Getting lost in the rage cage.
Is that what we wanted to call that? What was the segment we wanted to call? Rage? Because, what was it last?
We were trying to capitalize off of the rage cage.
Yeah.
I think Zach had a real zinger.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it was.
Should I look up what's new with John Woo?
No, no, because there's nothing.
There's nothing.
I tell everyone that's my favorite segment. That
there's nothing going.
He's alive and well. And yeah. Someone needs to teach him how to use social media so that we can see what's actually new with him.
Just make an account for him. And be like, I'll tell you what's new with John Woo. It's just Zach's Twitter.
We should make like a handful of like, next time we do like summer series or something, like a just says what's new with John Woo, like just white on black or whatever, just like a handful of like give them out as prizes or something like that, you know. Average Joe movie show on the back or something,
but misspell his name so we don't get sued.
Yeah. There you go.
It's a coward's mistake.
Just add an extra O.
Yeah. Oh. Gosh, we
get
got
that Ric Flair crossover.
we got lost.
Yeah, what are we talking about, Matt?
We were supposed to talk physical media, but I almost want to continue the other conversations. You know, you did tell me, like, Matt, we need you to get downloading, and that's something I don't do. You know,
why
what
not?
I do with all my digital codes I get with my movies?
No, 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 no. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being a bad boy.
What do you do with your digital codes?
Like, give them to a friend of mine.
Okay,
that's sweet.
People sell those.
I've been the recipient one or two times.
That's weird.
Are you one of these? Or like, if I buy doubles, you know, because I'm.
Well, I mean, we can play this into the conversation about digital media. Or physical media.
Yeah.
And we should.
I'm curious, Matt, like what percentage of movies do you see in theaters versus streaming versus physical discs? Just like on average.
I could give you an example of what I did just this last week. I have the Regal Ultimate, so I can go whenever I want. You know,
weird flex, but okay.
Regal. So go whenever we want. I'm just given this like the opportunities to see movies at theaters. I can buy any movie I want because I have a credit card. Could.
Ooh.
How do you fake get money?
That's how that works.
I can have any digital stream because I steal it from all the people who do pay for it. So.
You use other people's accounts?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Every
so
single
do you
one
pay
of them.
For any streaming services?
No.
That's a fucking hell yeah.
No, I have a lot of them.
So do you watch the majority of your movies at home then?
So this past week.
What's
I
your
just,
snack when you go to the theater?
What's my snack? Just popcorn.
Fuck yeah. What kind
what's
of,
your
what,
snack
you
at home?
You sound so pizza. Sad.
What kind of soda are you drinking?
Root beer?
Oh, yeah.
<It's all bad>. That's my favorite kind of beer, man, especially at the movie theater. Yeah. Root beer.
Lexi had a beer when we were hanging out here yesterday. We watched the first 20 minutes of Tenement, and Lexi, I'm going to have a beer. I'm going to pay for it later. I went straight to that refrigerator. I pulled out a root beer. I said, I'm going to have a beer, too, and pay for it later.
It's my best kind. So I saw The Invisible Man in movie theater. I bought 4 movies, and I streamed a movie I've seen 1,000 times. Those are the movies I stream.
So the majority of the films that you watch are on discs,
yeah,
physical media, yeah, followed by theater, followed by streaming.
Yeah, because if I've seen it 1,000 times, I just have to be in the mood for it. Like, you know, I do own the Matrix trilogy, but I see it on Netflix. It's like scrolling through, like, you know, the television, you know, you pass by something like, yeah, we'll put that on. You know, I was just, Emily watches The Office all the time, so I'm just like, let's see if there's anything else on, because she falls asleep after like 5 episodes. I'm like, I only got the remote next to me, so I'll just do this, and then I'll pass by The Matrix, and I'm like, yeah, okay, and then I'll fall asleep. Not because it's terrible, just because I've seen it 1,000 times.
It lulls you.
Yeah, it just rocks me to sleep, you know.
Wouldn't be the worst idea to recount our week all around, like in that respect, you know. Like the only thing I saw in theaters was The Invisible Man as well. I went with you, and I watched Good Time, which was phenomenal. I loved it, and I streamed Casino. I watched that because I'm just like trying to get in the mindset of going to Vegas in July for my birthday.
It's a solid week.
I streamed Casino after all my movies are in a box, right? Or multiple boxes right now. I used to own like 3,000 movies. Now I own probably like 500 or something. I dug through every one of those movies and could not fucking find Casino. And that's my fault for probably not having them on a shelf alphabetized or whatever the way they should be.
Gotta use the Dewey Decimal System.
You know. Yeah, but yeah, so when physical media let me down, well, I let myself down because I used to own Casino. I had like the best edition of Casino, and apparently I don't own it anymore. I lent it out to somebody or whatever. When I couldn't find it, I relied on a streaming service. So I guess streaming wins out, you know, because I don't think I watched anything physical media wise.
Do you pirate any media?
No.
Coward.
Glenn's here every day for the FBI to come get him.
Not if my VPN has anything to say about it.
Try me, hoes.
Come and get me in Italy, motherfuckers. This is a ad for NordVPN. If you use the code Average Joe Movie Show, you'll get
it'll do nothing.
You know, you'll get Mark Maron bringing you a cat mug.
Well, what about you, Glenn? You probably stream everything. I think you download and then.
I'm a bad boy, Matt.
He's a torrent. He's a torrent guy.
It's like the wild, wild west out there.
Dude, well, for me, there's so much shit that I seek out that's not available.
Like, at all physical media.
No, so. Streaming's practically useless to me. I renewed my Criterion because there's a few things that got added on that I do want to watch. And once I do that, I'll cancel it again. I have Hulu only because I get through Spotify. And since I'm in school, I pay $5 and I get Spotify, Hulu, and Showtime. I never use Showtime because, you know, fuck it. But not a fan of streaming at all. It fosters mediocrity, you know, and it's if you have that just scrolling through and watching whatever, I don't really see how you're supposed to grow in your viewing and find new things. So. For me, it's split between throwing them old files into the VLC media player, or I got a few Blu-rays. I recently sold like 2 boxes of discs, and I'm kind of going through. I bought a Blu-ray drive, and I'm ripping them to my computer, actually.
Oh, nice.
So sizing down my collection to like the essentials, what I want around, what I need around. And yeah, for me, because it's, you know, for instance, there's this guy that I love, Jess Franco, who operated from the 50s through the early 2010s when he died. Dude made well over 150 movies in his lifetime. And a lot of that shit is just lost to time. So it's, you know, when you go and you see the fucking Death Sings the Blues on some weird French site, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking download that. You know, and besides that, I mean, it's there is a line of ethics that I'll ride with torrenting. I try to keep it to things that are unattainable.
Okay.
And you know, if I'm gonna watch fucking Hereditary, I'm gonna stream it on like Amazon or whatever it's hosted on at that time. But you know,
you don't like taking risks, you know, on those. You don't like risking buying one.
No,
take the gamble, bro. You said it earlier. Take the gamble.
It for movies that are at that capacity, it's kind of a waste because the selling point on discs, particularly Blu-ray, they tell you it's quality, but I mean it's
unnoticeable a lot of the time.
A lot of the time. So yeah. And it's so what's the next thing you look for? The next thing you look for is special features. And for a lot of stuff like that, the special features are usually garbage.
I when I was reading into, you know, all this, when it's actually when people talk about streaming and the big disadvantages of streaming is sound. Like that, yes. That's the biggest disadvantage that
they
have.
Because people aren't properly compressing the files, because essentially, you know, you can't host a 40 gigabyte Blu-ray file on a Hulu. So when they remux it, the first thing to go, if they're not doing their due diligence, is the sound.
Yeah.
To maintain the visual, because that's what people in theory want. Then you got to think about your internet connection and shit like that. But to kind of answer your question, there's a couple of labels that I will pay attention to. I will almost always blindly buy from Vinegar Syndrome if it catches my eye. Them or Severin does a lot of things that I'm interested in. So for me, you know, a lot of these movies we talk about that are coming out in the theaters in a month, they're going to be on Netflix. They're going to be on Hulu. They're going to be wherever. So it's, if these things that I kind of view as culturally ubiquitous are going to be available to me, why do I need to waste my fucking money on that? It's, you know, when I could, you know, go and discover a great film from Roger Watkins and kind of support more of an artisanal business, if you will.
Do you have to pay for these downloads that you get?
I'm talking about Blu-ray with
this. Oh, Blu-ray, okay.
Downloads, I do have a more clandestine.
Awesome, I'm liking. Fuck it.
I do have a clandestine streaming service that I pay for. I don't question how it works, but I can get just about fucking anything. Nice. And I pay like $90 a year for it.
Oh, okay.
But beyond that, no. A lot of it is done through reputation on your site, whatever. Okay. I'm a member of a few different services, and usually, so long as you're sharing more than you're downloading, you're pretty good, and you can get your hands on some fairly interesting stuff. One that I watched over the last week, which is fucking kicking my ass for, because right out, I've been seeking out this one movie for at least a year. It's called Ruby in Paradise. It was shot in Panama City, Florida in the 90s, and it's a drama. It's about a woman who moves from a bad situation. She settles in the panhandle, and it just kind of follows her journey. Looking forward for years. The fucking DVD is expensive. I'm not going to spend $60 on a DVD. So, you know, finally gets added to a service, and I'm all the happier. However, like right after I go and search it on Google to find some reviews, see if there's any like thought pieces on it or anything like that, it's on fucking YouTube. So it's, sometimes that'll happen, but you know.
And what, it has been the whole time and you just didn't realize it? Or
it may have been, or somebody just uploaded it. And it's, you know, so for a lot of things, I mean, I almost watch YouTube, like keep an eye on YouTube more than I do.
Yeah, definitely.
Most newsletters or anything like that.
But would you say physical media then has its merits in that respect as far as accessibility to obscure films over, like for the most part? Because
yeah, it's,
if you're willing to fork out the money and scour the internet or literally travel to get your hands on the, or whatever, do you feel like you have more accessibility based on physical media, actually getting your hands on a copy of it than streaming it? Definitely versus streaming it, at least, you know.
Well, yeah,
torrents and all that kind of stuff set aside, like some of these obscure titles, even like your best thing is like Filmstruck and like Criterion and stuff like that for like older obscure titles or whatever, but like,
well,
it's gonna be impossible to access them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through streaming.
So Criterion's not obscure at this point.
It used to be
But a lot of the stuff with the Janus catalog and everything is readily available, like, I don't know, like Daddy's Home 2 is, which, yeah, phenomenal movie to watch around the holidays if you want to just fucking
why
drop
not make
out
it a double
life.
Feature with the first one.
Oh, because I didn't want to. No, it's so, in a sense, yes, as far as the physical media goes, because there's been times where I've ordered physical media just because I couldn't find it anywhere else.
Because it already exists, you know, because we've had physical media for so long and it's out there somewhere, that, you know, that copy of that title you're trying to, and maybe like streaming services, whatever, like they just can't keep up with like the obscurity of some of these titles.
They're
trying to like please the majority of audiences and have things that people are going to actually want to view. Mm-hmm. The masses are going to want to watch.
We're also in the middle of the streaming wars too, so it's with now, when you're getting to studios who are doing their own streaming services and withholding content, this is gonna be melodramatic of me to say, but I have no choice but to pirate it, because I don't fucking have, you know, if you're paying $10 a month per an individual service and you need to have 7 of those to get a well-rounded diet of what you're interested in, if you're people like us, people who are cinephiles, then it's, why the fuck am I spending $90 a month to watch 5 movies?
Yeah.
You know, I just, to put it hyperbolically. So it's at which point, yeah, you find a thing that, you know, I know a lot of people love the slip covers, which Vinegar Syndrome always does a great job of that. But for me, it's I don't have as much of a propensity towards physical media just because I don't like space being taken up. I'm not too fond of owning things. Good and I point. Don't think yeah. that to be a great fan of something, you have to own it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's it's a, you know, it's it, to me, it's not a healthy mindset.
I think minimalism has become more and more like commonplace in modern age. You know, we all want everything smaller. We want it to be able to fit in our pocket. We want to condense everything. Like, you uh-huh. know, we don't want to clutter up. I'm like, in a lot of respects, just the way my mindset works, like I'm very much a minimalist, you know, mm-hmm. I live in a, you know, a fairly small apartment. And the amount of movies that I had at one point in my life when I used to live like under my parents' household, they wouldn't even, they'd take up an entire fucking room in my apartment, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and
that sounds awesome.
I mean, well, it is awesome. It's, you know,
rent's not getting any cheaper, and it's,
it's awesome. Yeah. But at the same time, it's impractical for sure. And I can understand, you know?
Well, yeah. And for me, it's become really fun because it's, like I said, I found Vinegar Syndrome, and it became, yeah, let's buy this fucking, let's buy Skin Flicks, let's buy Grave Robbers, let's see what's up with this. And they're movies that I love. But when you have to sit there and look, because I have limited space as well in my living arrangement. So it comes down to what are the movies that I feel, in a sense, define me, as corny as that sounds. It's what are the things that, you know, I need to be able to have that thing to look at.
Yeah.
And, you know, you, when you have to look at it that way, I mean, I feel like you develop a stronger relationship with those things. It's more of an investment.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And the big catch for me is I used to own a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I dug through my collection for Casino the other night and it wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't available on any streaming service to watch for free. So I actually had to pay money to rent it on Amazon when
Which
I could
sucks.
Have saved that money, you yep. know? So what happens when out of your 9 streaming services, you go to watch this movie? Another good example is Young Frankenstein. About a month ago, there's some sort of legal something going on. I found some access to some information on it, I don't remember, where like, nobody has the rights to show it right now or something like that. It's not streaming on any service. Mm-hmm. You can't watch it on YouTube. Nothing. Like there's no way of accessing it other than probably through torrents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not through a legitimate subscription. And all I wanted was to show my girlfriend Young Frankenstein because she had never seen it. And I told her it was my favorite comedy of all time, comedy/horror. And it wasn't there. And my physical copy was gone. And I talked about it for weeks about, oh man, I really wish I could watch Young Frankenstein. I can't watch it. And then finally she surprised me by going out and buying the DVD. And we got to watch Young Frankenstein.
And that's great. And that, and it's no matter what, you're going to have that pitfall unless you're some archivist who just has everything. And at which point just becomes preserving it the best to your ability. Because I mean, what I'm doing in theory is unsustainable, ripping everything to a hard drive. That hard drive could fail. And
then
a lot of money and time just kind of went to the wayside. But I also just kind of follow, I'm almost more about the pursuit of the thing rather than, you know, it's because there's plenty of movies where I searched for years for anything resembling a watchable copy. Oh, I got it now. It can go on the shelf. And then it's a year later, I'm like,
maybe I'll watch it.
I labored so hard at getting this thing.
And oh, believe me.
Exactly.
Cannibal Holocaust. That was the first time I was at, first time I ever finally got to see it in high school. It was still really obscure back then, like Grindhouse release.
Yeah.
Nobody had brought it out yet. And I found some sort of offhand, I forget who the company was, but I found it at the Virgin Megastore when I was at a concert in Orlando at House of Blues. And I found it before the concert. And I basically said, fuck this concert. Like I need to go home right now
that
and
is
watch
insane
this movie.
That it was available on Disney property.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, it was. That's where I found it. Yeah. And I still think back to that of like just as a, it was like a being a young child on Christmas morning or something like that when you could finally find the physical copy of something.
Yeah.
You know, it's unmatched like in feeling, just the way it makes you feel finding the physical copy and having it in your hand and just like feeling like you have to protect it like a young infant and going home and finally getting to watch it, you know.
Well, and I have a similar story with that. It was probably around the same time when I was in school and everything, and I heard about this movie, and the first time I ever watched it was like a 240p file that I got on LimeWire and watching on my girlfriend's laptop. And just like, I'm so, and then like a month or so later, Grindhouse Releasing finally put it out.
Yeah.
And it was like a fucking Hail Mary of like just sitting there and watching it a better quality and everything like that. So those things are important. And it's for me, I was talking to one of you motherfuckers last night about binging and purging. And I think that's part of the fun. I mean, I'm not a total anti-materialist, but it's, you know, I don't think that I need to have the slipcase cover of fucking Thundercrack, but you know, when it comes down to it, I want to keep Fleshpot on 42nd Street around because it's, you know, that shit's important.
I used to collect DVDs and then I sold them all for teddy bar money.
Yeah, you're an interesting example in this situation, you know, because you had such a substantial collection, you shed yourself of that collection, and then you reestablished that collection. So, like, yeah, maybe shed some light upon
it. It was the stupidest thing I ever fucking did.
No, it wasn't. You saw boobs.
Did you sell the DVDs to get titty bar money in the sense of buying and owning a titty bar? Was it that kind of DVD collection?
No.
You're buying the wrong kind of movies if you're selling your movies to see boobs. Like, no, you got to spend some time in the Vinegar Syndrome catalog.
I know. I'm just like, God. Right. Damn it. You know, I was so mad. And then, you know, I kind of got over it. And then I kind of fell out of love with film for a while. I was just, you know, I wanted to pursue the career choice that I made. And it wasn't until that I got
time to focus.
Yeah. I got my career choice. I was at the job I wanted. And I'm just like, it was always being in the back of my mind that I liked movies. I still loved movies, but I didn't really.
I had a similar thing. What brought you back into it?
What brought me back into it, honestly, it was just like when the goals that I set
were met.
Yeah. And then I just had this burning desire for something. You know, just, it wasn't what was just fulfilled. It was something else. And then I just kept on going back to, like, you know, I'd see these movies every once in a while, and I'm like, God, that makes me want to make movies again. It would be, you know, this is when Quentin Tarantino was just busting out a movie every 2 years. And I was just like, it was really nice.
Can I throw this conversation to a very interesting trajectory?
Yeah, you can send it.
So we want to talk about home video, home movies, and everything like that. The ability to watch something in your living room.
Yeah,
it's not about quality. Never was.
No.
If it was, Betamax would have won. Over VHS. So let's keep that in mind when all these fucking... As I've been unpacking a lot of these Blu-ray files recently, paying for this thing, it fucking, you know, it's standard, like, good quality Blu-ray file is around 40 gigs. You know, that's when you know you, like, for instance, that fucking Suspiria 4K that they put out. That's probably packing, with all the special features, are 60 gigs.
Wow.
But, you know, a lot of these where people are like, redone for Blu-ray, 20 gigs. 15, yeah. A few of them.
It's always been more about practicality than quality. But at the same time, we have established the fact, though, that if you want, like, the best quality as far as a home viewing, video viewing experience, your best option is 4K Blu-ray and a 4K player and a 4K TV and all that versus just streaming on a basic modern,
that takes a,
you know,
significant
Roku TV or whatever.
Investment, though. Yeah, I think exactly. A lot of people look at it as...
Well, it's like audiophiles who say that they want vinyl because it's the best quality, but then they're playing it on their Crosley and they bought white vinyl instead of like a black 180 gram record.
Yeah.
Overall, do the masses really care all that much?
Not at all. It's just something that looks nice to say.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing within that is, you know, you look at, like, I mean, I don't think I've said very many nice things about streaming so far today, but you look into other cinematic genres and you think about the effect that the home video market had. I mean, consider adult film, you know, hardcore films. You know, it's my favorite allegory of it is Boogie Nights. Watching that shift that it takes when, you know, the 80s came along, it was time to do VHS. So you have a less immersive experience. You're not going out to the cinema anymore, in that case, to do something dangerous. And then we look at it about, what are we, 40 years later now? And you look at what's going on now in that market versus what was happening when it was something resembling cinema. And that's where it's a slippery slope when you you know, it's we experience it here at the theater all the time. We fucking open Marriage Story, and it's opening on Netflix on the same day. So it's one of those things where it's, I can, again, say that, oh, well, I don't want to own this, I don't want to own that, and blah, blah, blah. But it is important. It's important to have the tangible thing, just as it's important to get off your fucking ass and go and watch a movie on a big screen.
Yeah.
And it's the streaming mentality has seeped its way not only into the cinema, but also with concerts, with shows. And yeah. It's, you know, if you have the easement of being able to just stay in your cube and be safe and not, yeah. You know, it sucks the joy out of life.
It removes all the romance from it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Completely, you know.
Yeah.
Some of our ancestors, you know, cinephile ancestors would probably be rolling over in their graves right now, you know, with what modern streaming services look like, you know, because it does, it removes just a lot of the romance and intrigue from the experience.
Exactly.
Didn't David Lynch say something about that?
Well, you can't watch a movie on your fucking iPhone.
Yeah.
Is what David Lynch said. No, you're absolutely right. It's, fuck, what was it? You made a good point. Then we went to Lynch. Where all good points go to die.
I fucking hate Eraserhead, by the way.
Hey man, that's a guilty pleasure movie for me, but yeah, that's more of too. That was a movie that like solidified for me, I'm not having a fucking kid.
That's a movie that solidified for me that David Lynch is just completely hit or miss and so abstract that he'll never be one of my favorite filmmakers or anything like that. I'll always be intrigued by his body of work, but like he's just it's it goes over my head a lot. It's just too much. You
know? There's people who do it better.
Yeah.
He's just, again, persona. Mm-hmm. He has a character.
Yeah.
And people like that character. People love it. Can you elaborate on Eraserhead? No. And it's good fun and everything, but it's, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Sorry, I keep taking this to a David Lynch place. I'm sorry. I ruined it first, and then I brought up Eraserhead.
Inland Empire state of mind.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks season 2.
Man, fuck Twin Peaks. I'll say it.
Love Boomy. Twin Peaks. I'm sorry, season 3.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, the more modern season. Did you watch the Showtime revival?
Watch a little bit of it. I don't care.
Horrific.
I don't care about anything to do with that show. That show is cited in some respects as a catalyst to the downfall of cinema, as we know it. Because you brought the cinematic lens to television.
Yeah.
So then you get Sopranos, and you get where we're looking at fucking Netflix TV shows and look at the cinema. No, man, let's make it look like Married with Children. Park that fucking camera down and let's watch a cynical old man say sexist shit.
What would you rather do? A, be with your wife. B.
Boomer humor.
Love it. Did you miss me with every bullet so far? Sorry.
No, keep going.
Well, have you seen that one where it's
I know.
Get this, y'all. Are you ready for this? So it's a woman. She's drying her hair, you know, hanging over the sink. She goes, can you hand me my blow dryer? Y'all ready for this? The husband has a gun. Right? Dude, comedy gold.
Get out, Boomer.
Well, I did tell Lexi recently that I love exploitation cinema, so therefore I think I am a boomer on that. I think it's a very boomer thing to like exploitation cinema.
God, I lost my train of thought.
Well, what do you think? Physical media, like, is it gonna like die with us, with the millennials? Is it gonna last a little bit longer? Is it gonna last a lot longer?
I think, like, it'll be peaks and valleys.
We're keeping it alive right now, but it's not just that. Like, I mean, well, I'm saying that too broadly. I'm talking about cinema in general. Like, we are the millennials. Basically, are the ones that kind of revived vinyl, you know, and that's bigger than, I think, CD sales or anything like that right now. Like, vinyl, we've proven that how old is vinyl? 100 years old or something, whatever. We've proven that that's not on its way out anytime soon. Could cinema, could there be something similar with that? I mean, the vinyl uprise came back after Napster and after, like, all of the digital, you know, streaming of music and after cassettes and CDs and all that kind of stuff, you know, like, could the same thing happen with
I think there's cinema. Always going to be nostalgia bros.
It's happening with VHS already.
That's why, like, if you go to a 35 millimeter screening, I mean, specifically like at Enzion, it's mostly younger people in that audience, like people even like younger than myself. And I'm in my late 20s, and film died in the cinema around like 2012. We were seeing the last like fully 35 millimeter theaters.
Yeah.
So these people, there's almost no way that they were watching 35 millimeter in theaters.
No, it's a novelty.
It's a novelty.
Yeah. And it has that vinyl like quality to
right,
it.
Right. Right. I also think that
it's hipster, bro. It's hipster.
With physical media, companies like Janus and Criterion and Kino Lorber and Milestone Films, these people are restoring films, they're archiving mm-hmm. films, and they depend on physical media sales. That's why they have such extensive DVD catalogs.
Well, and that's why I made the point of saying there's a couple of imprints that I will stick with mm-hmm. and just buy the shit because I want them to keep doing their thing.
Right.
So it's, again, even though I'm saying like, yes, I will torrent shit, I will rip my copies, my collection, it's purely functional. It's mm-hmm. purely, I don't have the space to facilitate 3,000 plus movies. I would mm-hmm. love to, but you know, it's just not an option for me. So within that, yes, it is very important. Even if you torrent something, treat it like a sample, you yeah. know, just you pull from the catalog, you see if you like it, then you go buy other shit,
support what you love.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's
kind of how I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's and that's, I think you raised a great point with doing this so that it keeps these companies at work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise we wouldn't have things like Haxan around still.
Because there's some crazy statistic out there. I think it's 50% of films that were made before 1950 are gone forever. They were not mm-hmm. preserved. And 90% of films made before 1926 they're just gone.
That's really, really upsetting.
It's disheartening. Yeah. And the same thing is going to happen again if we don't support the companies that are doing
yeah.
that type of work.
Yeah. Do you buy Arrow and all that? You buy all?
Oh, brother. Do I buy Arrow? Come on. Yeah, man. I have that nice-ass Valerian Borovchik box set that comes with the book with the beautiful short stories.
That's the thing. They go the extra mile. Like, that's what, you know, they're trying to
take. I think they're the better Criterion collection.
Yeah.
Like, it's they have a wider variety. It's hard for me to support a lot of what Criterion does because there is a nepotism inherent to their operation.
I do love that Godzilla set that they made.
No, it's great. And they do a lot of great work. But it's, you know, there's some story out there about how when they signed a contract with another distributor, essentially they had to start taking in films because they were receiving, it was that funding or whatever. And that's why you see a Criterion edition of fucking Lena Dunham's Tiny Furniture. Like, it's...
I bet she's so pleased with herself.
Fuck Lena Dunham.
I remember, you know, when The Curious Case for Benjamin Button came out, and not even a year later, it was on Criterion.
Cold War, Roma, like great films, yeah. But it's, you know, the fetishization of Criterion is fucking weird.
Yeah.
I have quite a few Criterion editions of shit that's important to me, but yeah. It's... When you have people who are just, you know, the memes go around, people dropping their fucking paychecks every time. Like, everyone acts like it's a huge shock when the Criterion catalog goes on 50%. It happens like every 2 months.
Because
you know how much fucking money they make off their releases? The 50% releases, they're still making like...
They're doubling their money.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's just business.
If you look at what they charge just on a regular basis versus like the regular Amazon price, you could basically probably get close to the 50% off on Amazon to begin with.
No, you do. 100%. Yeah. And that was... because the first one, like when I was a... up and coming collector of eclectic cinema and all that bullshit that's boring. I dropped like $300 one of the first times they did a sale when they had a bunch of shit that I was interested in. And then, you know, the next time I was like, whoa, I have Amazon. Let's see what's up.
Yeah, dude, right.
7 times out of 10, cheaper buy on Amazon.
Holy shit. The Devil and Daniel Webster is only $19.99 on Amazon to begin with year-round. Go figure.
Yeah, Amazon's right. An evil corporation. Fuck Jeff Bezos. But if he keeps on giving me Criterion editions and sweet-ass Arrow films for $18, you know, he can, you know,
dude,
can fuck my life up.
Dude, I love his pre-order. You don't have to pay right now business. I'm like, okay, this comes out. This comes out in a few
months. I got it secured.
And especially you could do it overseas too. All the Arrow stuff, I just buy off of Amazon co.uk.
You're so smart.
I'm just like, I don't have to buy this from, was it Diablo DVD? No, that's a porno.
Diabolik.
Yeah, Diabolik. No. I did type that up one time.
Please support Diabolik. They do great work.
Yeah, they do. It's just that I can't. Sometimes I'm just like, God, I kind of don't have the money for this right now.
No,
and
I get that. It's,
and then so know, I just go to Amazon.
You got to do what you got to do.
And it arrives a lot faster.
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about Arrow.
Just, you know, remember.
The reason I bring that up is because Arrow is what catapulted me buying movies again. Because
yeah, I've been to your house. I saw a bunch of Arrow shit.
Yeah, I
was really upset that you had such a cynical view of Microwave Massacre, but you know, such a fun movie, man.
No, I
such
watched
a fun
it.
Movie.
I watched it by myself at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
It is like, that's okay. That's I understand. Right. I understand now. Yeah, because that's fucking. I watched that by myself in the middle of the afternoon. It was hard to do. So
it's like I need
I have some
people.
Sympathy.
So I was just, but I. It really just catapulted with what they were, how they were releasing it. I'm trying to think of the first thing I ever bought.
Reanimator, maybe?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, because somebody told me about it. And I'm just like, oh my fucking God. I haven't, you know, since the 3-disc DVD edition that you had, I was super jealous. It came with the pen, too.
Still have that one.
Yeah, so that one was so sick. And then I saw this one of all the booklets that were coming out. And I'm like, what is that? This is very limited edition. I need to buy it right now. And so I did, not knowing it was a pre-order anyways. I was like, God damn it, I got to wait. But then I realized they put on Bride of Reanimator on there, and I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I got to buy that. And then it just – and that is also when Scream Factory were doing their sales.
Yeah.
Their 30, 40, whatever percent off sales that they had. And then I just – it just snowballed.
Lexi, what are you excited for out of physical media right now? What are you looking at? What's some of your favorite stuff in your collection?
See, that's where I am a complete failure. I don't collect physical media. And the physical media that I do have is so ridiculous. I have...
Well, you're referencing your extensive Laserdisc collection.
She also has HD DVD.
So I have like this crippling aversion to buying something for full price. So I'm all about those bargain bins at like Big Lots and Walmart and the dollar store and going through those $3 DVDs. And I just got a copy of Scrooged for $1.25 the other day.
That's solid.
Say? Like,
of course I'm going to buy this. But I have a really small DVD and Blu-ray collection. It's ridiculous. I have like the Criterion Three Colors trilogy next to Borat, next to the dollar disc of Scrooged. But I have so many streaming subscriptions. I have such severe FOMO that I'm just like, gonna want to watch something and I'm not gonna be able to, so I have to have all the streaming services so I can watch anything I want at any time. I'm not super savvy when it comes to pirating and downloading and whatnot.
Is he trying to teach you?
So I stream. No, he's not trying to teach me.
I mean,
I
have Lexi on my special streaming service,
which is very impressive because they have titles from Netflix, HBO, Hulu,
and it's a secret.
Like, all, yeah, they it,
fuck you,
there's
HBO.
Everything on there.
Yeah, it's no, I don't. I'm more of like, I'll always tell people if you're looking for something, let me know and I'll do the legwork and download, because it's like Andrew and I kind of talked about earlier. I invest in the whole torrenting thing. It's but it's like I said, it's largely I'm not going on and downloading Green Lantern. It's just it's for me. It's more of what is my current obsession and how can I find it? I mean, right now, for instance, I've been really interested in this guy, Ulrich Seidel, and his Paradise trilogy used to be on Criterion. For whatever reason, they took it down. So, you know, my ass has to go out and source it. You know, it's if we lived in a perfect world and we had a unilateral streaming service, whatever. Yeah, I drink the punch. I don't like doing work. I'm lazy.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's I don't know. I guess just how I'm wired.
For when I buy movies, for me it's more aesthetic than actual I get watching that. Them.
Yeah, I get that from
like
you.
Like when I, you've seen where my horror movies are. They're in a curio cabinet, seven feet tall.
Yeah.
Like I make sure that all, I rearrange it every like 3 months. Now it's just gotten overflowed. I'm just like, God damn it, I need a bigger one.
So you're coming more from the perspective of a collector.
Yeah.
By saying that.
Yeah, I'll watch these movies, but some of them, I wouldn't say most, but more than probably 30% I haven't seen, still haven't seen.
Out of the ones that you own?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Glenn's watch list.
Yeah.
It's going to take you a few years.
Yeah, so it's just, and then I go on eBay and I buy it. I'm not buying the one in the plastic fucking case. I'm buying the one with the box set. Or steelbook,
yeah,
best edition out there. And I'll double down on ones that I think quality-wise are better, like Synapse. I wish they made more movies that did it.
Much love to Synapse.
Synapse is like...
So are you a Peep Show Collection Volume 1 through 32 kind of guy, or...
Popcorn was the last one.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. I borrowed that one from him. I still have yet to buy it, but it is available still, and that's like one of my top five movies I need to purchase right now is the Steelbook Synapse Popcorn.
Yeah, it's just like, there's just something about Steelbooks as well that just, it's so sleek, and it is... When it comes to like the decision between box sets and steelbooks, you know, with box sets, you just get so much more. Like I have an Alfred Hitchcock box set, and it's not really, it's there. All the discs are put in reels, little tin reels.
Oh, that's neat.
And then they're all focused up. And in the back, there's like, you know, he did storyboards, you know, little memoirs of his, you know, his times on these films. And it's just, I just love that stuff. I also have the 31 film collection of the Universal Monsters on Blu-ray, in which they look way better. Like you can, like sometimes you just tell a big difference between, you know, these black and white films over DVD to Blu-ray or VHS to Blu-ray, you know.
But I got that box set as a gift for Christmas this past year.
You did?
Yeah. And I'm always really impressed by all the bells and whistles that will go into like these special editions. I just, to me, like personally, it's just not very appealing, but it is interesting how we all fall on such different parts of the spectrum. Like Glenn with his digital files and myself with streaming, and you're a collector. And it's, so it's like all these different viewpoints are fascinating.
And the public in general, like which physical media means something to you. Like to you, you're all about movies for physical media. That's your whole collection. But when it comes to listening to music, I know you like you definitely own some vinyls and stuff like that.
100% Spotify.
Yeah, you'd rather go Spotify. Well, what about books? You know, like, are you going to go purchase 100 physical copies of books, or are you just going to have a Kindle or something? Like, you know, just download it on Amazon or something like that, you know?
Actually, just made the switch to Kindle.
Really?
Yeah. I switched to Kindle pretty recently.
And you're an avid reader.
I try. but no, it's...
It's not often, though, that you see like somebody advocating all forms of physical media. It's like, oh, yeah, I only read hard copies of books, and I listen to my CDs and my vinyls, and I watch my DVDs and Blu-rays. Like,
yeah,
usually you adhere to one or over the other.
And I kind of do the same. I mean, it's... I'm a little... I try not to be quite as extreme. I've been playing a bit of a heel here, if you will, admittedly. Gonna break that down, but no, it's I mean, it's fuck. I mean, I listen to a lot of Spotify, but I own a pretty modest record collection. And again, it's like I said earlier, for me, it just boils down to what is important. Because I love the ritual of putting a record on the platter, just like I love the ritual of putting a disc in the Blu-ray player or picking up a book and being able to smell the history of the book.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is space, convenience, and, you know, I don't need a bookshelf full of books to be happy. I need the stories, and I need the experience of being able to consume that.
But it's still nice to have the option.
Yes, and that's why, I mean, you know, similar to like the most that I own in my Blu-ray collection is works by this guy Jess Franco or Jean Rollin. Similarly, in my books, it's mostly Marguerite Duras or Alain Robe Grier. But if I want to read Dante's Inferno, I'm just going to download Dante's Inferno because it's I just, you know, it's a little bit more ubiquitous. I don't have as much space. If I really feel the need to have the hard copy, then I'll just go to fucking Barnes and Noble.
But I think as far as physical media goes, books would outlast anything, you know, over music, so, over movies, yeah, or anything, because it's so like iconic and so just like intrinsic and such a part of like the human experience, you know, and knowledge. It's obviously books are, you can't eliminate books,
and there's also these great books on film that are coming out. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that Fab Press puts out, you can't get a PDF of that, so it's you know, I don't,
or if you're in college, some of these textbooks that are available, like sometimes you just have to physically get the, like, there's no way we're going to eliminate books. That's going to be the last one, the last man standing, I think, over music and movies.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I just, whenever I think about accessibility when it comes to, I hate having to rely on certain things like internet. I don't want to rely on downloading or something. I was just like, just get it here. I can look at it. I can pick it up, put it in right there. It's there no matter what. I mean, obviously if the electricity goes out, I can't watch it or something like that, which sucks. But you know, in the less I have to rely on things, the better, you know, but it's still just like there. I don't judge anybody who doesn't have a big movie collection. They claim to be, you know, like, I'm this big movie guy. And, you know, sometimes I get involved in my little ego and I'm just like, how many movies you own? And then, you know, however many movies you own, I'm like, yep, you don't like movies, dude.
Well,
you don't
like movies,
bro. And then I get caught up in that sometimes. I'm just like, ugh, God.
Well, it goes back to that mantra that I was saying earlier. I mean, it's ownership does not justify fandom and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's you know, I think we're all into the art. I think we're all into the mode of storytelling in general. And
we're not fucking posers, bro. That's for sure.
Well, I know I'm not a poser because I have seen no Marvel movies ever.
You know, he's the biggest poser here already. He hates it just to hate it. No, I'm just kidding.
I do masturbate to David Lynch films. That's how you know I'm a real film buff.
Fucking.
Wait, which ones?
Why, you want to compare?
compare lists.
Compare material.
You compare notes?
No.
Would there ever be, like, is there a certain, I'm trying to figure out, like, if so, some of your movies that you have on digital come to physical media, like, would you be like, I'm buying that right fucking now? Like,
depends on the special features. I mean, and that's actually Severin just put out two Jess Franco movies that I really want to see in their restored form with their interview, you know, the archival interview with Jess and Lena. It's The Night of Open Sex and Cries of Pleasure. You know, two obscure movies that just haven't been popularly available for ever. I mean, it's been on like VHS and there's random rips online.
Right.
But you know, it's one of those things to where I try not to allow that mentality to decide how I'm going to handle my finances.
Right.
Is what it comes down to. And what I'll probably do, I'll buy it, I'll rip it, and I will go and sell it to a resale store.
There you go.
And, you know, if all else fails and my hard drive fucks off on me or whatever and I miss it that much and I need... Because, I mean, I always make the joke to Lexi, I'm a bit of a Pauline Kael. I hardly revisit a movie. There's too many movies out there, and I want to see them.
I'm totally different. If I love a movie, I'm like, I want to see this again.
You know, like, there'll be once a year where I'll watch, like, Inferno or Saline and Julie Go Boating or Playtime. And those are, like, the movies that I want to go and hang out with. But it's a loosely intellectual pursuit for me. And just collecting imagery and collecting stories is what's important to me. So it's, you know, there has to be a point where I can't sit down and watch, I don't know, like, I'm not typically one to sit down and watch The Office on a loop, and that's
I'll tell my wife that.
I understand why people do it, and it's there'll be evenings where I go home and I'll watch a season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I fucking love that show.
Oh, it's fucking phenomenal. But you know, it's like people who, a really popular thing is just kind of John Carpenter seeming to be the end all be all to people. I've seen these movies. They're fine, but I don't, no. There's not much in me that's like, oh my God, let me go back and watch this. But I'll watch Carnival of Souls once a year.
What?
So it's a preference thing, but you know, I guess I have a different mission in mind. Is right. What I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
But as far as acquiring the physical copy of like certain movies, like special features, that's like, mm-hmm. that's your main factor for sure.
If I want to own it, it has to have some bitchin' ass special features.
Is it a thing yet where you can stream a movie?
Criterion.
It includes the special They're features. Do you have to pay anymore? Nope. That's included in your. That's kind of revolutionary.
Not all the titles have special features, but the majority of them do.
The important ones, typically.
Yeah. So that's a big deal. That's revolutionary right there. That in itself would be enough for people to like completely make the transition into streaming.
Yeah, and that's where it becomes disappointing, because Vinegar Syndrome for a minute had their own streaming service, and I would have loved to have seen them get into that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It was short-lived, to my understanding, and now they just distribute through Amazon for the streaming. But yeah, not every film is going to have good special features. I mean, there's plenty, like I mentioned that guy Roland, who I love. I 86'd a bunch of his movies recently because it's, what are the special features? The trailer? Man, whatever. Like, I don't need that. But yeah, it's like, a lot of the stuff that I've kept is box sets. I have a great Valerian Borovchik box set that was just really well done. It's an Arrow Academy. So it has a lot of essays in it and fun stuff like that. But also, you know, I have that, but I also still have a few fucking bootleg DVDs sitting in a small Mylar sleeve that I've just had for a minute. And I probably won't get rid of them.
Yeah.
Nice. Not just because nobody will buy them, but, you know, because I like having them.
I still have my select VHS, you know.
Yeah.
Just mostly out of, being, I guess, the millennial, you know, whatever, like, adhering to my childhood. So it was something that was such a big part of my childhood that was everything to me, going to Blockbuster and perusing the shelves and seeing all of the, you know, all the VHS artwork was always so fun and everything. And you know, speaking of the ritual, I don't want that ritual back though. Like, that's one of those rituals. It's like, okay, let's get rid of, like, I don't want to have to rewind it. Like, I'm looking for this one scene and I want to go back and like, I have to rewind the whole movie and it's going to make a really loud, crazy noise. And it's going to take like 3 minutes or whatever. And if you want to access a certain part of the movie, you can't and whatever, you know, or like something that was before the movie.
Yeah,
or after the credits or what, you know, whatever. That's a ritual I'm not fond of, the VHS process.
Uh-huh.
But I still keep them because, I don't know, because they're near and dear to my heart. Like, that was a big part of my childhood.
I think VHS also has a particular aesthetic that can't be found elsewhere. I mean, if you want to speak technically, we were talking about quality earlier. I mean, everyone says the vinyl thing. But really, if you have a FLAC file or a WAV file and it was mastered in the way that a vinyl file is supposed to be mastered, I mean, you're pretty much just as well off. For me, there's a couple of VHS that I have simply because either there is no good version of it on DVD or it's just not available. I mean, I think of these two movies, Mirror Images 1 and 2. I have some shitty fucking rips of them on my hard drive. But yeah, I sought those titles out because I wanted to watch them in a more true to form version. I mean, if you're watching a fucking 90s erotic thriller, I think it should be watched on VHS.
That does still exist. You know, the fact that like certain titles probably are still only available in VHS.
Oh, of course.
Certain obscure things that never made it to DVD and still haven't made it to streaming, mm-hmm. and you can't find it in torrent or, you know, whatever. Like,
oh, yeah.
That still exists, you know. And I think really the revival of VHS, kind of the way vinyl came back, it's mostly segregated to the horror community.
Yes.
I don't think there's a bunch of like romance film fans out there who are like, oh, I need to acquire every fucking beautiful love story I've ever seen. Dude, on VHS. Say, like it's strictly like a horror thing.
Yeah.
But horror was one of those formats that like there was just so much being released, just being vomited under the Blockbuster shelves and all that kind of stuff, that some of them still have not made it through time.
And again, Severin is doing a great job with their imprint Intervision at getting a lot of those shot on video horror movies.
Yeah.
To us, which yeah, is,
and most of them are not. I won't say most of them, but a lot of them are shit. They're for charming. Sure,
they're fun.
They're worth viewing for sure. There's a lot of shit out there. For
I will
sure.
say,
and,
though,
and I will say, the worst quality I've ever seen as far as film goes in general was VHS. You know,
oh yeah,
like, there's it doesn't get poorer quality.
Should have been
that.
Should have been Betamax.
It is what it is, but it's what I was raised on.
Well, I was gonna say, if any of your listeners have a collection of '90s erotic thriller they want to forward to me, I will gladly take all of them in.
You heard it. You heard it here. If you guys are still listening 2 hours in, man, we talked.
Don't we have some fucking movies to watch? Come on.
Yeah. We got this lottery system that Glenn devised somehow for us to pick the movie that we're going to watch later because it's his birthday. Or what?
Lexi's birthday is more important and before mine.
Only yeah, one of those statements is true.
We have about 2 hours, right? And it's your birthday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
There we go. So, well, we're going to go on that. We could, Jesus. Good job, Glenn, taking over the show. I like it. You know? he talks a lot. Oh,
and
God.
All your listeners are going to be, who's this fucking schmuck?
Dude, I liked it. Give me a break because my voice is fucked from all that vomit I was doing yesterday.
Oh, well, yeah, I appreciate you all having me on. It's been a great experience to be behind the wheel of the Maniac vehicle with compromised brakes.
That is exactly what this is.
Oh, yeah. So it's customary on podcasts for people to plug what they're doing. I do have a stand-up comedy show. No, I'm kidding. But we are showing.
Zach could shut the fuck up. Zach.
I hope really that mad. This makes it beforehand, but at the theater here, we are showing Friday the 13th on Friday, March 13th. There will be a special anonymous second feature that is not part of the franchise, but is great, great fun. So if you're in the Daytona area and you hear this, or if you want to travel abroad, you know, international mm-hmm. listeners, we invite you all.
All
that should be a great time.
Yeah, good. Well, I think I was about to say you can plug in some stuff, but Glenn's got
that's
it covered.
That's our focus. Yeah.
I've listened to a few podcasts in my day. I know how it works.
So anything else that he's missing there, Lexi?
No, absolutely not. But for Friday the 13th, we want to encourage everyone to dress comfortably. They'll be here for like three and a half hours. And bring your sleeping bags. We're going to clear out the front portion of the theater, make that available for those who want to.
Are we going to reenact a death?
Camp
well,
style.
Yeah. If anybody falls asleep, Lex and I are going to pick them up and start beating them against the
there is a There is a pillar right yes. there. There's a pillar right there for it.
Yeah. Tickets are $10 at cinematique.org, and you get free coffee and camp snacks.
Camp snacks?
Yeah. Camp snacks.
Can I show up dressed as Jason Voorhees and just stand over by the door with a machete in my hand at all times?
Please do.
It has to be a real machete, though.
Yeah. Okay. It has to actually do some damage.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, we're also.
How are you going to establish that? Like, do I have to, like, we'll have a meeting beforehand and, like, I'll, like, chop down a tree with
I
it
need to watch
There'll
you
be
kill
some
a man.
Forms.
I have to actually kill a man. Yes. Okay.
There'll be some forms you got to sign. you know, just liability waivers, really.
Jesus, I didn't really think this one out. Maybe I'll pass on this one.
I'm also really excited because y'all are looking to do the summer series again, no?
Yeah, I got to get on that. But yes.
Let's make some magic happen.
Dude.
Make some babies.
The only
happen.
Thing I know that we're doing is Jaws. It's the only thing I know right now. So I got to think about that. You actually emailed me last week, and guess who didn't get back to you? Yeah. I didn't because I was afraid
he was,
to get back to you.
Too busy vomiting.
You were afraid to email
me back? Yeah,
because
I was just like, God damn it. I feel like if I have nothing, so I'll just ignore it.
Hey, real quick, at just an added fun thing. Would you all like to do the lottery system on the air?
Sure.
All
sure
right,
thing.
So let's go one by one, starting with Lexi. Pick a number.
Any?
Does it have to be between anything?
Between 1 and 4. Let's try that.
Oh, okay. 3.
Shane?
Uno.
Mm-hmm.
There's 5 of us. No, there's 4. 2.
4. 2? 4.
And What are we watching?
2.5 rounds up to 3.
Oh. Oh.
I'm going to grab the movies real quick. Let's make sure it's dead air while I'm gone.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Nope. So I feel really bad about ignoring your email, but
Way to establish this over the air. Yeah. Like,
let's air it out. No, it's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
Literally airing it out.
If you ever do it again, I'll kill you.
I'm stabbing your face with soldering iron. Do we know what it is?
Okay, so here we have The Burning Moon, which is an Intervision title.
Okay.
Quick read through. When the Germans make a horror movie, they make a fucking horror movie. In 1997, writer-director, special effects editor Olaf Ittenbach changed the face of video horror, force-fed its ripped-out eyeballs to screaming audiences, then used a drill machete and shotgun on its still-twitching torso. Ittenbach himself stars as a degenerate junkie who babysits his young sister with two bedtime stories of the damned. First, an escaped serial killer turns date night into a graphic family massacre. Then a country priest on a rape and murder spree leads to a disturbingly explicit descent into hell. It became the VHS that shocked America. It has been banned in its motherland for nearly 20 years, and it remains perhaps the most violent and depraved shot on video saga in history.
Oh, goodness.
The next one is an AGFA, something weird title.
AGFA?
America Genre Film Archive.
Okay.
They do phenomenal work of releasing underrepresented cinema. God Monster of Indian Flats. Just when you thought it was safe to go back to the petting zoo, you meet God Monster of Indian Flats. Written and directed by infamous outsider artist Frederick C. Hobbs, this is the story of an 8-foot-tall toxic sheep monster that blows up gas stations, smashes crooked politicians, and terrorizes stoners. From the surreal Wild West locations to the outrageous monster effects, out of control, an explicitly deranged creature feature in the history of forever.
The history of forever.
History of
don't question
forever,
it.
As in fuck off. The eliminated film, which I think is something that everybody here would have really loved to watch, so I'm kind of happy that's eliminated, because I am a sadist after all, is Scary Movie, not to be confused with...
Neve Campbell.
Yeah. Never legitimately distributed until this very moment, as in tonight, you know, fresh off the presses. Scary Movie is a joyous horror triumph starring Academy Award nominee John Hawkes. On Halloween night, big-time nerd Warren, John Hawkes channeling a mix of Buster Keaton and Crispin Glover, attends a spook house in a small Texas town, but is the haunted house as harmless as it seems, or has a psychotic mental patient found a new stomping ground? Shot in Austin, Texas, Scary Movie combines Argento-esque neon, Freddy Krueger dreamscapes, and slapstick inspired by Evil Dead 2 to forge a Valentine to Halloween, rubber monster masks, and chopped off limbs. From the songs by Rocky Erickson and Butthole Surfers to the surrealistic mood, this is a true discovery for adventurous horror heads.
That was the one I wanted to watch, God
damn
it.
So what's your pick? The Burning Moon or God Monster of Indian Flats?
I think God Monster of Indian Flats.
It is Lexi's birthday, and she has chosen God Monster of Indian Flats.
Oh, there we go. I love it. I'm ready to get this going. So you guys listening, fuck off.
Go buy God Monster of Indian Flats from AGFA.
Yeah. Watch it with us, because this will be out. Actually, we would have already seen it. Never mind. All right. So Lexi, say goodbye.
Bye.
Glenn, it was good to have you. Say goodbye, though.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, no problem. Zach will be back next week for me to tell him to shut the fuck up. And
I miss him
Drew,
so much.
Say goodbye. Drew.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.